Take our Bibles and turn to the book of Isaiah. Isaiah. How many of you have ever in your life experiences been in an experience and this was your attitude toward this experience? Will it never end? That's, I think, some of our high school seniors, we call it senioritis. You know, they get senioritis at this time of the year, and will it never end? And I keep reminding them, don't wish your life away. It's going to go so fast. But have you ever been in a situation like you thought it would never end? That usually isn't our attitude toward pleasant things, is it? It's usually our attitude toward challenging, difficult things. In the book of Isaiah, chapter 32, Isaiah 32, may I just remind you that Isaiah was a tremendous, tremendous prophet. He had some wonderful privileges rarely afforded to humans. In his opening chapters of his prophecy, what is he privileged to experience? Yeah, he saw a vision of Christ on the throne, of God on the throne, and what did he say in response to that vision? Woe is me, I am undone, I'm unclean. You know, he just felt unworthy to be viewing these things. And a careful comparison of John's vision of Christ in the book of Revelation and this vision sees many similarities in the descriptions. But then, what is Isaiah? What is God wanting to accomplish through Isaiah and his prophecy? Well, of course, many of the prophecies were an attempt by God to call back a nation that was wandering and drifting and turning their backs on him and his word. And so he uses these prophets to warn. But again, in the prophecies, there are several messianic prophecies that in the midst of the gloom and the doom and the coming judgment, we see these pockets of sunlight bursting forth. And we have the prophecies about the virgin birth, and we have the prophecies about Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. And we see all of these wonderful pockets here and there being presented to us. And then we have some truth here about end time things too. We have some truth. Some of the prophecies begin to talk about what we would call the millennium. You know, we have some prophecies that talk about things that are going to take place during the millennium. But look at here in chapter 32, and we're not going to read, we're just going to read a few verses just to get the idea here of what we're dealing with. And in chapter 32, verse 1, it says, "Behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, and princes shall rule in judgment, and a man shall be as an hiding place from the wind, and a covert from the tempest." And so what's he talking about? And there's that a great rock and a weary land in that verse. And then if you skip down to verse 16, "Then judgment shall dwell in the wilderness and righteousness remain in the fruitful field." So what's he talking about? A time when what? A ruler is going to rule, and he's going to be a righteous ruler, and everything's going to be righteous, and there's going to be proper judgment. And we believe this is talking about the millennium. And then when you skip to chapter 33 and verse 5, it says, "The Lord is exalted, for he dwelleth on high. He hath filled Zion with judgment and righteousness, and wisdom and knowledge shall be the stability of thy times and strength of salvation. The fear of the Lord is his treasure." And then look at verse 17, same chapter. Thine eyes shall see the king in his beauty. They shall behold the land that is very far off. And so again, I think we have a section here that's dealing with end time prophecies. If we had read in between places and other places here, if we'd read the whole passage, there's some passages to talk about judgment in this passage too. But when we come to 35, this is the passage I kind of want us to just dwell on for a few moments tonight. Chapter 35, the wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it, the excellency of Carmel and Sharon shall they shall see the glory of the Lord and the excellency of our God. Strengthen ye the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees. So in this passage, we have a prophecy about a coming time. And I believe that this prophecy has a literal fulfillment and a spiritual fulfillment. I think they are both involved in this passage. But the literal fulfillment of this passage in chapter 35 is what? A time when literally the desert is going to bloom like a rose. What do you think about when you think of desert? Somebody describe for me a desert. Yes. Hot, dry, rocky. Desolate. Did I hear cactus? Cactus. How many of you have ever literally been in a desert? You've been somewhere in a desert. And there are certain beauties of a desert, but generally a desert is not a place that you would pick to go on your next vacation unless you were just going to visit it briefly and then leave. You know, you wouldn't want to go spend weeks in the desert. Some of these reality TV shows show people going out and surviving, you know, in a desert. And so a desert is a desolate, usually dreary. Maybe you might think of cracks in the ground because there hasn't been moisture for such a long time. And the flowers are not there. Hot sands, the burning wind as it blows across the hot sands. This desolate, dead, vast area. And when I think of deserts, I think of some of the creatures that live in the deserts. The certain snakes live in the desert, you know, and certain wolves or coyotes, I think, go along in the edges of the desert. It's just barren for the most part. And yet, here we have a picture of this dry, desolate, barren area. And much of Israel is still that way today. If you go down into the Judean wilderness, it's called wilderness for a reason. And if you go down into the wilderness of Zin, or the wilderness of Sin, I have stood on the rim of a crater called the Ramon Crater. And it's not as impressive as the Grand Canyon, but it's a huge crater. And you look down and it's just desolate for hundreds of square miles. Here's this very wonderful thing. Isaiah is prophesying a time when this desert is going to blossom like a rose. Now, I don't want to... My whole purpose is not to speak on prophecy tonight, but I can take you to places in Israel that 20 years ago were nothing but vast desert with not a thing growing. I mean, today they are doing all kinds of remarkable things. And I went to the home and the hut of David Ben-Gurion, And it was right down in the Negev Desert. And yet the research that they're doing and the growth that's taking place as they, and literally, and this is not literally, they are growing roses down there. It will blossom like a race. I believe that this prophecy is in the process of being fulfilled, but it will not be fulfilled fully until the millennial days. But I think it's in the process of being fulfilled. And yet, here we have this picture that this, we might even use the word God-forsaken place, is going to have a change. Something's going to happen, and there's going to be refreshing. There's going to be growth again. There's going to be beauty again in the place where there is no beauty and where there is no growth. And you all know even what happens in our region when we go for any prolonged period of time without rain. You know, rain is necessary. And so just in your mind, get this picture of desolation now becoming fruitful, blooming and blossoming again. And so here, as he is now spiritually speaking, he's also referring here to the nation of Israel, how that they have gone through this period of terrible desolation because they've turned their backs on God. And that's part of the reason that God is going to bring judgment upon them and bring the captivities upon them, and why they are going to have to suffer because they have turned their back on God. And yet, what has he promised here? That there will be a remnant, and one day what is going to happen? This desolation, this desert situation is going to be over. And why? Because we read that, behold, a king shall reign in righteousness and princes shall rule in judgment, and then judgment shall dwell in the wilderness. He mentions that. And righteousness remain in the fruitful field, and the Lord's exalted, and he, for he dwelleth on high. And so, and this wonderful picture of the earth mourning and languishing, Lebanon is ashamed and hewn down, and Sharon is like wilderness, and Bashan and Carmel shall shake off their fruits. But then we already read that the time's coming when all of that's going to be restored. There in verse 2, it shall blossom abundantly and rejoice even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it, and the excellency of Carmel. And he mentions all these mountains again and these lands that are very fruitful and lush. Turn over to Isaiah 41 and verse 19. Notice what else is going to happen as the nation is renewed, and here's a picture of that renewal, but it's also a literal picture, I believe, of what's going to happen. It says, verse 18, I will open rivers in high places and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry land springs of water. I will plant in the wilderness the cedar, the shittah tree, the myrtle, the oil tree. I will set in the desert the fir tree and the pine and the box tree together. And notice verse 20, that they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of the Lord hath done this, and the Holy One of Israel hath created it. So again, we're talking about this wonderful time of refreshment. Perhaps some of us are experiencing personally in our lives maybe a desert time. Maybe some of us are experiencing some times when it just seems desolate and dry. And do you think those experiences ever happened to people that we know about in the Bible? Do you think they ever had what we might call a desert experience? I think we have many, many who had those kinds of experiences. Did Noah ever have one of those experiences, do you think, where he preached for all these years and worked hard? And do you think that his desert experience ever found itself in the blooming rose experience? Well, I believe it did after he got off the ark and as they saw things growing again and this huge devastating hand of judgment was receding from the land and things were starting to grow. I've oftentimes wished that I could be there to see Noah's reaction when the dove came back with the branch in its mouth and the leaf. And I thought, wow. You know, I can almost see Noah falling on his knees and just lifting his hands toward heaven and thanking the Lord. And what does he know? That the desert experience is just about ready to end. Do you think Abraham ever had this kind of experience? Well, I do. When he was on his way to Mount Moriah to offer up his one and only son, and he was going through a desert experience, and he was about ready to raise. I thought it's interesting. You remember when he had his conversation with the servant who accompanied them, and what did he tell the servant to do? Stay here, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship, and we will come again. You know, but can you imagine? There's two people going to worship, and he knows that half of those who are worshiping are going to die. And this is a real desert experience. And then all of a sudden, what does God do? He intervenes in this desert experience and stays the hand that would kill the son and provides a ram and a substitute. What wonderful. And so in this hour of darkness, this hour of night, this hour of despair, this hour of hopelessness, God brings him forth out of that desert experience and brings him forth into a fruitful, lush time again. Do you think David ever had one of these kind of experiences? I vision it often when he is running from Saul, who's trying to kill him. He is, and I didn't mean this, but he is literally having a desert experience, isn't he? David is fleeing into the wilderness and into the desert, and he's there trying to be sustained against that one who would kill him and kill him for no good reason. Have you ever had anybody turn against you and their reason for doing so is really has no foundation for it? I can remember a couple of times in my ministry where sometimes when the people that I had spent the most time with just had a misunderstanding and was just such a tough time to try to regain them. David had such a time and he was being pursued. And David even eventually agreed that he was probably going to perish at the hand of Saul. He had kind of given up. This was a desert time for David. And yet, the roses blooming time came later, didn't it? Where did he end up? Sitting on a throne. So certainly David's experience and the roses bloomed again. Do you think Joseph ever had this kind of experience? Yeah, being sold as a slave and ending up a slave and ending up in jail and again, all for nothing that he was guilty of. And then his own father, Jacob, who saw the coat of many colors torn and covered with blood, being brought back by the brothers. And can you imagine Jacob, his beloved son? And for 20 years, the next 20 years, Jacob experienced this desert experience at the loss of his son. But was there a roses blooming experience? He got to live long enough to do what? Go down into Egypt and see his son sitting on the throne. This reminds us that many Old Testament saints had their desert experiences. Let's change to a new setting and let's go to the New Testament. You know, there was a period of between the Old and New Testament. We call this period of approximately 400 years. What do we usually call that? The silent years. Why do we call them the silent years? Yeah, because no prophet was speaking. And so the whole nation could have been thinking that they're going through a what? Desert experience. They're going through a desert experience. And then after nearly 400 years, a man clothed in camel hair, a man from the wilderness, comes on the scene and says, prepare ye the way of the Lord. And then eventually says, behold the Lamb of God, which taketh away the sin of the world. And Jesus came at a time when religion and idolatry and hypocrisy and ritualism and apathy were so apparent in the nation. Shepherds worshipped, and wise men came, all in response to the fact that maybe this desert time is about to end. This world, so long a desolate waste, was going to enjoy the blooming of him who was called the Rose of Sharon and the coming of that one who's called the Lily of the Valley and the coming of that one who's the fairest of 10,000, the one who is altogether lovely. But did the Rose of Sharon ever have any desert-like experiences in his own experiences? Certainly. Christ was rejected and Christ was misunderstood, and even when he died, I hadn't thought of this until I was doing some reading, even when he died, no one called him Lord except for the one thief on the cross. There was nobody else that called him Lord except the thief on the cross. No one talked about his kingdom except the thief on the cross. Why? Because the disciples were going through their own desert experience, and they believed that death had crushed the life out of the Rose of Sharon and out of the Lily of the Valley. But when the roses all seemed dead and gone, this isn't really an Easter message, but it could be. What happened? The resurrection. And the resurrection ended the desert experience. And so again, what ended their experience? They said, we have seen the Lord. Is your life going through a desert experience tonight? Is your life going through a wilderness experience tonight? But you'd rather be in the garden? You'd rather be in Eden? Maybe it's ill health that has put you in that experience. Certainly we know that God cares and God knows. Even when we're in this desert experience, He knows our down sitting and our uprising. Perhaps your desert is loneliness. Remember what a friend we have in Jesus. Maybe your desert is misunderstanding. Well, remember this. Jesus is alive and Jesus cares. Maybe your family circle has been broken. Maybe bereavement has come and put you into a wilderness experience. We sang a song tonight from Isaiah. Though your sins be as what? Scarlet, they shall be as wool. Though they be red like crimson, they shall be as white as snow. You know, that is also speaking about the change that takes place when we get out of the desert of sin and find forgiveness and cleansing. I want us to, again, look at these words as Jesus, they tried once when he was teaching, or they actually tried it more than once, but they tried when he was teaching to stone him. And they picked up stones to stone him to death. And he asked this question, "For which of my works do you stone me?" And he mentioned some of his miracles. "Would you stone me for this? Would you stone me for this?" But you know what was true of their hearts long before they picked up a stone? They had already stoned him in their hearts. And but did that cause Christ to quit, to step back, to not go forward? No, he said, "I have come to seek and to save that which was lost." And so he refused. But when he went to the cross, he knew that though he would experience this wilderness experience, what was going to happen later? The resurrection, and the roses would bloom again. So let's be encouraged tonight. If we are going through a desert experience, let's remember some of the Old Testament saints. Let's remember Jesus Christ. Let's remember the truth from Isaiah 35. "The wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice with even joy and singing." So let's, again, trust the Lord. And why did we sing the song, "Master, the Tempest is Raging"? Because it kind of went along with the message tonight that Christ is going to come along and take us out of that difficult time and provide for us. Let's turn to 434.